When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
3 seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! Hillian! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up and no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com. This episode of Podcast on the Brink is brought to you by Crane Credit Union. Get a $150 deposit into your new Crane Credit Union checking account when you get e-statements, have direct deposit, and use your debit card. Plus, there's no monthly service charges and no minimum balance to open your account. Stop in at any of Crane Credit Union's 14 locations or visit their website at cranecu.org for more information. That's cranecu.org. Crane Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA. All right, we're joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by the legendary Rick Bozich from WDRB in Louisville. And Rick, I mean, let's start with the obvious question. What was your first reaction to hearing that Indiana was indeed hiring Archie Miller?
I was impressed. I thought it was a wise choice. I thought in many ways it was the logical choice. And frankly, I've been a little surprised by how one-sided the reaction has been. Usually when a coach is hired, there's been, I don't know, a larger pocket of grumbling. But, you know, I've heard, I don't know, 90-95% of writers and coaches and fans and stuff that I've heard from think Indiana made the right call.
You know, it's interesting because obviously we didn't hear a ton about Archie Miller during the lead up to the decision. We heard a lot, obviously, about Steve Alford, and then the crazy Billy Donovan rumors kind of picked up steam. And so, you know, he kind of flew under the radar. And yet, in hindsight, you know, like you said, it does kind of seem like the obvious choice. Why didn't it seem like the obvious choice all along, at least in terms of the public discourse about the decision?
I think there's two things, Jared. One would be Billy Donovan, well, Brad Stevens, I think people finally realized at some point that was never going to happen. Although, you know, in a perfect world, if you said who you can go get, it's Brad Stevens. But everybody knows he's done well with the Celtics. They're just starting to get really good. They've got Brooklyn's number one pick. He's not coming. Timing never has worked for that, even if it ever was his dream job. So then you drop down to Billy Donovan and you say, he kind of did really good in college basketball. He's in Oklahoma City. Durant's gone. Westbrook's there. They're not going to get any better. It's not a great free agent destination. Maybe he'd think about it. And then there was always the Steve Alford thing, which I think in many ways was he's always going to be there because he's Steve Alford and what he means to IU basketball. But it grew even bigger than most people thought it would because of what Fred Glass said in the press conference when he fired Tom Crean about the double check pluses. So that's the reason he was, you know, the sun was blocked out by all those things. But I also think part of it might be, and I don't know this for a fact, but the people at Indiana are not dumb. And despite what some of the people at Sports Illustrated like to write. And I think it was good for them during the search to have all the Twitter stuff and all the internet stuff be about these other guys so they could very quietly, which is hard to do these days, fly under the radar and talk to Archie and whoever else they talk to and get it done. It was a great, it kept the spotlight always on Donovan and Alford. And I know they did gauge Donovan's interest. I don't really think Alford was ever in the mix. And so they could get Archie and they could get it without anybody really reporting it or saying it until, you know, Saturday morning.
You talked to, you know, I've read all your work from yesterday, and I encourage everybody to go over to WDRB.com and check a lot of that out. But you've talked to a variety of people within Indiana and also just around the country, different coaches. I know even yesterday you asked John Calipari, who has known Archie Miller for a long time, about his thoughts on the hire. You know, anything stand out about things that were said about him? You know, the things I continue to hear are words like tough, organized, just, you know, a dedicated basketball coach that's really going to sink himself into the job. You know, what kind of things are you hearing when you talk to people around the country about this hire?
I mean, he's a fireball dude who doesn't back up one inch. I mean, Calipari, I think, well, I read Tom Archdeacon's story at Dayton, and I think he was involved talking to Archie and his dad and stuff to encourage him to do this. And he's cut from the same cloth of that, of like, I'm going to be right here and I'm not going to back up an inch, and you might knock me back, but I'll come forward, which a lot of coaches are that way. But I think, you know, he's got even more of that in his DNA, because this dude was a starting point guard in the ACC, which is, you know, he played from 98 to 2002 I know he's listed at 5'11". I think he's more like 5'10". Some people say 5'9". He was successful. And he was, you know, worked his way up through the ranks. He didn't get any shortcuts. He started as a GA. Then he went to Western Kentucky. Then he went back to NC State, Arizona, Ohio State. So he's learned. He's climbed the ladder the way a lot of guys do. And he's, from what I've been told, he's just like super competitive. And the one thing I really liked hearing was from Dana O'Neill, was like, he's got thick skin. And coaching at Dayton, I think people need to understand, people who've been around the game for a while understand it is. I mean, that's more than just your average mid-major job. That's, Indiana played there a few years ago. You saw their arena. It's a big-time arena. Their tradition of basketball goes back to the 60s when they were going to the Final Four with Don Donaher. And it's the biggest thing in town. They love the Flyers. They still play the First Four there every year, which shows you the commitment to basketball there. And he went in there and had 5 20-win seasons in 6 years. He made the tournament 4 years in a row, which I think people should not discount that fact. I mean, we've seen how hard it is to make the tournament has been for Indiana, where they've missed it two of the last 4 years. And I don't think they won the conference tournament any of those years. They made it as an at-large team in a second-tier league, which means – he scheduled well and won enough games to get respect and get in there. So I think he gets it on a whole bunch of different levels.
You know, you're right that the reaction has been nearly unanimous. I mean, a lot of excitement, a lot of enthusiasm. The one maybe negative or question that I've heard, or at least had asked of me, is, okay, but how is he going to recruit the state of Indiana? What can you tell us maybe about his history, you know, recruiting the state? Obviously, he has some experience, you know, recruiting big-time college basketball at Arizona and at Ohio State. And as you said, you know, Dayton is perhaps a bigger program, a bigger job than people give it credit for. What do you think about his ability to recruit the state?
Yeah, I mean, that's a blank slate. We're going to find out. That would be a question, I think, for anybody that came in, because let's be honest, recruiting is more than just about, you know, going to every open practice, going to every AAU game, building relationships with coaches. There's a lot of things that go on in recruiting that are hard. They're complicated. They're at times not pleasant. And, you know, Tom Crean worked hard But for whatever reason, the last few years, his pitch or his approach wasn't resonating with guys. So Miller's going to have to figure it out. And that is the biggest question, I think, for any coach as they move up from a job like whether it's, you know, Dayton or UMass or Western Kentucky or Louisiana Tech or whatever, is, are you going to be able to go into the Shark Tank and recruit the guys that Kentucky and North Carolina and Duke and Kansas and Michigan State are recruiting? So I don't think it's going to be like, I don't think it's automatic. He's going to come into Indiana and he's going to get, you know, there's, I think there's what, three top 100 players in the 2018 class. He's going to get all three of those guys, and people shouldn't start pulling their hair out if he doesn't. I mean, if he can get one, I think he's doing pretty well because he's starting late. If he gets two, that's a really good sign. So that is the thing to watch. And I think what's also important is, and Jeff Goodman brought this up with me yesterday when we were talking about it, is his staff. He, you know, recruiting, that's where staff is important. You got to have guys who can get the pulse of a recruiting situation, make determinations of, is this really a guy this staff can sign? Is this really a kid who's interested in Indiana? Are we, is it wise to invest so much of our time and resources into recruiting this guy? Or should we say, no, the risk isn't worth it, move on to the next guy who might not be quite as good a player immediately, but projects to be a better player, but we have a better chance of getting. So that's the number one thing I think Miller will have to figure out.
Hey, we'll get right back to our conversation with Rick Bozich coming up. I ask him what Indiana fans can expect from an Archie Miller coach team and what kind of adjustment it will be for Archie Miller going from Dayton to Indiana. That's coming up in just a minute on Podcast on the Brink. But first, I want to take a quick minute and tell you about SeatGeek. As you know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert because everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. And hey, hopefully a changing of the guard in the IU basketball administration will lead to more non-conference games and more reasons to go to SeatGeek and buy tickets for Indiana non-conference games. And when you do that, you will see that SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does the work, you save the time and money, and best of all, Podcast on the Brink listeners get a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how that works. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, or you can do this at their website. But go to the settings tab and click add a promo code and enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BRINK today. All right, now back to our conversation with Rick Bozich. What do you think we can expect from an Archie Miller team on the floor?
Everybody I talk to says defense is his calling card. Really strong man-to-man defense, ball pressure. I watched them play against Wichita State. I mean, their dudes were big, physical guys who were, you know, it was a physical type game. Offensively, it's not going to be, I don't think, as prolific as the Tom Crean offense was when it was working well. But I don't think it's going to be as prone to turnovers and misfires when the Tom Crean offense wasn't working well. I think they'll run some, but I think it's, you know, it's not like a, it's not a frantic or frenetic attack, which IU was often during Crean. I think it'll be a little bit more controlled. But I think defense will be his calling card. His defensive teams, I think, in the Palm Metrics, haven't they all been in the top 40 in the last 3 years? And the final, the Elite Eight team was maybe in the 70s. I mean, I think that he's learned that from his brother. He's learned that from his dad. And I think he realizes that, you know, you can – defense can be consistent. Offense can sometimes come and go, not only in terms of whether shots are going in a different night, but also in terms of the talent that you have. You can get guys to play the best defense that they can play. And frankly, I mean, I don't think we saw that at Indiana the last few years.
What will the adjustment be like for him going from a situation like Dayton, obviously on the mid-major level, to Indiana. Is it going to be a big change in terms of dealing with expectations in the fan base? And how do you think he's prepared to deal with that? I know he spent time at Arizona, and he obviously his brother Sean is, you know, been on the big stage now for quite a while. And also, you know, he did spend time at Ohio State previously, so he does know the league. He's been to the different venues. But how big of an adjustment do you see it being for him jumping up from Dayton to Indiana?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of adjustments. The initial adjustment is just the whirlwind of people trying to get his time now over the next few weeks. He's going to have to settle on a staff. He's going to have to, you know, recruit the current players to make sure that, you know, enough of them stay, or the ones that he wants to stay. He's going to have to recruit the guys who've committed for next year and maybe add another guy or two, or a fifth-year transfer. He's going to have to really work to close ground on the 2018 kids. He's going to have a bazillion media people who are going to want to talk to him and write about him. He's going to have, you know, fan or booster groups that are going to see him. So time management early is a big thing. And then as he goes forward, just, you know, for any coach that moves up a level, it's more competitive in the Big Ten than it was in the A-10 in a lot of ways. You're going against better athletes. You're theoretically going against better coaches. And he's going to have to, you know, get a handle for the rest of the Big Ten. What would work in the Big Ten as opposed to the A-10, and what might not work?
What do you know, if anything, about his scheduling philosophy? I know I've seen there's been some stats kind of thrown out there on Twitter that it looks like he's scheduled obviously more aggressively in the non-conference. I think one of the things that people over time really just did not like about Tom Crean is the fact that, you know, he had too many of the cream puff type games. You know, people wanted more of the, you know, maybe the 150 to 200 range games than, you know, Mississippi Valley State and whoever, you know, Houston Baptist. It seemed like those just became the norm now. And I'm curious your thoughts on how he'll go about navigating the non-conference schedule, because that's a huge part of the job as well.
I think he'll crank it up a notch, maybe two notches. I look at his schedule this year. I mean, they went on the road and played Alabama, which was an NIT team. They were in that event where they played Nebraska, and then they beat Winthrop, which is an NCAA tournament team. They beat East Tennessee State, which is an NCAA tournament team. They played Northwestern on a neutral floor. They played Vanderbilt. So that's four games there in a row with a game against St. Joseph's of Indiana, for some reason, thrown in there, where they played teams that end up being in the NCAA tournament. So, I think he'll be more aggressive. And I agree with you. That was a thing that fans at Indiana, I mean, they thought that, you know, too many teams like 200 or to be in 350 instead of having some teams in the hundreds, who gives you there's more risk of losing one of those games, but you don't worry about taking a loss. At times you look at the long term, like Denny Crum used to do at Louisville, is you find out what the real strengths and weaknesses are of your team, and you have time to fix them going forward. And it does help you, in your computer rankings, because you get more credit for playing good teams.
Do you think his relative scheduling toughness and existing relationship with John Calipari moves the needle at all on getting the IU-Kentucky series going again?
I don't know. Calipari's not going to want to come to Bloomington at all, right? Isn't that his deal? Or did he say he would do the two neutrals home and home? I don't know. I don't think so. Kentucky's got so many of these other high-visibility events. I mean, they've got the one thing with Duke and Michigan State and Kansas, and the other one with Ohio State, UCLA, and North Carolina, that I don't think Kentucky really has a whole lot of interest in playing Indiana myself. That's my view of it.
You know, one thing about Archie that concerned me a little bit as I was, you know, trying to research these guys and come up with my own, you know, top seven lists and all that stuff. I mean, his resume for a 38-year-old coach is, I mean, pretty much impeccable. I don't know that he could do much more than he's done. The one thing that kind of stuck in the back of my mind, though, was this, you know, off-circulated story about his dream job being Ohio State. Do you think that is at all a concern? I mean, do you think if Fred Glass thought that, you know, Archie Miller had designs on getting to Ohio State at some point, that he would have hired him? Is that something Indiana fans should have in the back of their mind, or just something to forget about?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, I don't know many guys who would have left one high-level Big Ten job for another high-level Big Ten job after one or two seasons. No, I don't see that as a, I think he saw that Indiana was a top 10 job that he could get, and it was a place he can go and make his name and establish himself. And I don't see that being a concern. And I mean, I know the stories are about Urban Meyer and his health, and he's not doing that well, and Ohio State fans are grumbling, but I think if Archie really thought that was the case, he could have easily sat tight for another year at Dayton and maybe gotten that job next year or even another. He's already been patient. He's turned down, depending on the reports that you believe, you know, 3 to 7 jobs that were considered, quote, better jobs than Dayton. He didn't really seem very aggressive at all in pursuing the job at his alma mater, North Carolina State. So I think that he'll be fine in Indiana, and there's other things to worry about than that.
You look at the last two off seasons here in the Big Ten, just the hirings that have taken place. You know, Steve Peichel went to Rutgers, and he's obviously made that program a lot more competitive right off the bat. And now you've got this off season, Archie Miller replacing Tom Crean, who did a good job in Indiana. You know, he's obviously, it was time for that situation to end, but you know, you can't say enough about what Crean did from the beginning at Indiana and kind of building it back up. But I think they just needed somebody to take it to the next level. And then also at Illinois, you've got, you know, Brad Underwood taking over for John Gross, who really struggled to have success. You know, you look at also the Big Ten nationally. It's been since 2000 now since they've won a national championship. Do you think the league is kind of sliding backwards? And do any of these moves, I guess, have a chance to move the needle nationally and maybe make the league a little bit better going forward?
No, I don't really think it's sliding back. They got three teams this year in the Sweet 16, like other leagues that were considered to be elite leagues did. In fact, more than the ACC. And I think one thing that's been concerning to a lot of people is they haven't been getting as many prime recruits as it used to be. I don't think they got as many top 30 or top 40 recruits. But I think the league is getting better. I think Rutgers did make a good hire. Minnesota obviously got better. Northwestern is better than it's ever been. I think that what the Big Ten needs, though, I mean, and is for Indiana to be good. I mean, when the Big Ten was good, really good, Indiana was right up there and with anybody else. And that hasn't, they've won the two regular season championships. And you're right, Tom Crean did a terrific job, especially considering, you know, what he inherited just wasn't consistent enough. But I look at, you know, I think a lot of the perception about the Big Ten is tied to Indiana. So if Indiana can get back and get into some Final Fours and win a Big Ten tournament for once and do some things, that will improve the perception of the Big Ten. One thing I figured out from this whole thing, that people that say that IU basketball is, the brand has been diminished, I don't think that's true, because this has been written about a ton by a lot of national outlets, and there's a lot of interest, more than Georgetown, more than Missouri, more than Illinois, a lot more than national people are writing about what's going on in Indiana. They're writing about it because they know that Indiana basketball is a big deal.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. I was listening to a podcast that Evan Daniels did with Archie Miller, and just a great discussion. And to anybody who's listening, you know, if you want to find out more about Archie Miller and his philosophy, listen to him talk about it, because there's a lot of stuff out there with him talking about it. And this conversation in particular was interesting. And one thing he mentioned that I had never thought about, you know, whenever a new coach comes in, there's going to be an adjustment period, a transition period. And we often think of the first recruiting class, like that first season, as the coach's first class. But, you know, Archie was explaining how when he was at Dayton, you know, you get a new job and that first recruiting class, you know, you're kind of scrambling and just trying to pick up on the relationships that were already existing. You haven't really had a chance to build relationships with juniors and with underclassmen. And so he's in his sixth year at Dayton, or was in his sixth year at Dayton this year. And this class that's graduating is the one that he felt was really hit their first true recruiting class that they had really built relationships with. And it gave me a little bit of a greater perspective on, you know, what kind of patience level should probably be required for a new coach to really get an understanding of what it will be like when his program is fully installed. What do you think will be fair expectations for Archie Miller at Indiana? And what kind of patience level should Indiana fans have as he builds the program in his own image?
Yeah, that's a great question, because the first year is always a challenge because you don't know which guys are going to stay. You don't know whether their skill set fits the skills that the new coach values. You don't know what their buy-in is going to be. And then you've got new guys coming in. The class he's going to have will be freshmen next year. I know it's Durham, Moore, and Smith. You don't know how many of those guys. Well, I know two have already asked out of their letters, so you don't know how many of them are going to be there. You don't know if he's going to add anybody else. The first year of recruiting is still tough. I think Crean's first full class, wasn't that the Watford, Creek, Hull's class, Elston, those guys?
Yeah.
Which was end up being a really good class. But I think even in today's world, it's probably – unrealistic to expect the first class to be, you know, top 10 or top 15, because everybody else has been recruiting these guys for quite a long time and built relationships. So I'd say the next class is when you'd have a better chance to judge how they're doing in terms of how they're going to play. I mean, if the right guys come back, I mean, if Morgan and Davis and Robert Johnson and Devontae Green and Curtis Jones and I don't think Hartman's going to play, but or Ananobi, or I don't know about Bryant. You know, the right core of guys come back. I mean, I think they could be a mid-level Big Ten team and possibly a bubble team. And I know they weren't this year. But, you know, I'd say it's really not fair to put major expectations on them until the, you know, third or fourth year.
Last question for you, Rick. You know, it's when it comes to the expectations, I think given the enthusiasm and all the positive things that have been written, it's pretty, you don't have to squint very hard to see how this hire could be a home run and how Archie Miller could, you know, spend 25, 30 years at Indiana and it just be a really great, you know, relationship with a lot of successes. If this doesn't go well, you know, if in 5-6 years we're right back here, you know, looking for a new coach, what will be the reason why this doesn't work?
Wow, that's a great question. I guess the reason would be it wouldn't work is just that other schools in the Big Ten or other schools around the country are better or doing a better job of getting the best players, doing a better job of developing the best players, and doing a better job of sustaining success. That's what makes this hard. I think when Indiana was really good in the, you know, 70s and 80s, obviously, Knight was a terrific coach who was recruiting at a high level. Back then, I didn't get the sense that as many schools were as into basketball as are now. And I think that it's harder now because more schools are pursuing basketball expense. More schools are paying big money for coaching staffs, you know, have bigger arenas. Shoe companies are involved now. And I don't know if that's a problem for Indiana not being an Adidas school, but I do know that Kansas went out of the tournament last night, and there is no Adidas school still left. So all those kinds of things would play into it. I don't think there are obstacles that would stop it from happening, but the main thing is it's hard to do, and people need to understand that. The best quote from the whole tournament, I think, so far that I've heard was that from Jay Wright, who won it all last year, but in three of the other 4 years, got beat in the very first weekend with a higher seeded team. And he said, anytime you win a game in the NCAA tournament, you need to cherish it because this stuff is hard to do. And he's right. And the problem at Indiana was the success was so unrelenting in the 70s and 80s, and now it's disappeared. And I think that people need to understand, is it possible? Yeah. Is it likely? I think so, but is it a sure thing? No. And the last thing I'd say was the focus, I think, in many ways, needs to be to do some of the things that Tom Crean did to win the Big Ten regular season championship, to put more emphasis in the Big Ten tournament championship. If you're one of the top programs in the Big Ten, I think the stuff in the NCAA tournament will take care of itself.
One last thing before we let you go here. I know you were involved with the Showtime project, Perfect in 76, which I wanted to ask you about. I had a chance to watch it. I thought everybody involved did a really good job. I thought it was a great story. And I just thought it was, you know, really well produced from all sides. I'm curious what it was like for you to be not only asked to be a part of that, but now that you've seen the finished product, your thoughts on the job that Showtime did with that. And, you know, if fans haven't seen it, why you would encourage them to go ahead and take a look.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing it. I was honored. George Roy, who's a longtime and highly acclaimed documentary maker, contacted me last summer and asked me if I'd come up to Bloomington and sit down for a while and give my perspective of those days from sort of as a student. And I guess I would encourage people to watch it because it gives a bit of the history of IU basketball before Bob Knight got there. It certainly helps explain why he was successful, and it shows you just how remarkable that group was. I mean, I know that people know some of the background, but the last undefeated team and the year before that, the team was even better, but Scott May broke his arm, and instead of winning back-to-back national championships, they only won one, and that was a motivator for those guys the next year. And they're all, I mean, Scott May, Quinn Buckner, Tom Abernathy, all those guys are iconic figures in IU basketball history. It's got Don Fisher in there, Chuck Crabb, Bob Hamill, even some of the guys that didn't play much. And to me, the best part of it, at the very end of it, the Showtime cameras went to this small hole-in-the-wall restaurant, which was the kind of restaurant Knight enjoyed eating at more than anybody else, for his birthday party last year, and he showed some emotion there. So it even shows a side of Bob Knight that he doesn't show to many people. So I would encourage people to watch it, and unfortunately it's only available on Showtime right now. At some point I think it's going to be available elsewhere or for DVD, but if you have any appreciation for Indiana basketball and its history, I would watch that.
Follow him on Twitter, at Rick Bozich. Check out his work at WDRB.com, including his latest story about Archie Miller, which includes an interesting anecdote about Archie Miller and Darrell Revis, of all people. Rick Bozich, thank you so much for coming on and lending your expertise.
All right, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. And if you like this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry.
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.